You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to CHGO Bulls, presented by PointsBet. Use promo code CHGO when you sign up to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. I am Will Gottlieb. You can follow me on Twitter at @WontGottlieb. And I'm here today with my buddy Mark K, Mark Karantzoulis. Follow him on Twitter at MKHoops. We're going to mix it up here a little bit and do one of our old retro now at this point, Bulls HQ edition podcasts. I'm trying to mix in some different content for you guys over the course of the off season. So Mark and I thought we would jump back in and do one of our old shows. So we've got some interesting stuff to talk about, but first, just welcome back, Mark. I haven't talked to you in a while. How you doing?
Yeah, I know, man. It's been a while. How's Brazil treating you? I just realized we're both in the Southern Hemisphere at the moment.
Hemisphere, and I think we are both in like non-United States biggest Bulls fandom areas. Like, I think a lot of our traffic comes from Brazil and from Australia. So shout out to all of our listeners from these places.
For sure, 100%. And I certainly know a few South Americans / Brazilians that's to tune in. Shout out to all those guys. I appreciate the support, of course.
Absolutely. So today we're going to talk about a few things. Number one is this buzzword that we keep talking about, that we keep hearing about, continuity, and what does it actually mean, and how does it like function in real life? What will it actually look like? So we're going to dive into that. And then a little bit more about just like the Bulls sort of philosophy as an offensive team, the fact that they shoot so few threes and whether or not you can be an efficient offense playing that way, and sort of how the continuity of the roster mixes in with that. And then what they can do to try to be a little bit better this year. Obviously they played great at the start of last season, but really fell off. They need to find a way to, you know, even if it's not just reach that peak that they were at, be more consistent throughout, and then sort of get to a higher playing field when they're nearing or hopefully entering the playoffs. So let's, Mark, kick it off with this idea of continuity. This is something that you and I have been chatting about a lot. What does continuity even mean? Like, what they keep saying, we're going to, you know, have continuity. We're going to bring back the same roster. Is it just like we're going to retain the same players? What does this mean?
You know, like how businesses have their like their mission statements or their slogans, their one-liner type things that are very grand and very broad and don't really tell you much. I feel like this is the exact same thing in this instance, where it's like, it sounds nice, continuity is a good word, but I mean, what does that actually mean in terms of like, well, where does it apply? I guess, does it apply to just the core guys? Does it apply to the entire roster? Like, that isn't clear to me, or it hasn't necessarily been made clear by the Bulls. And I guess based on their actions, it pretty much applies to everyone, given that the majority of the roster is unchanged. Now, maybe that's just because of the offseason itself. Obviously, the true test of continuity will be into the season and how things change and evolve around that, assuming it does. But again, that comes back to what the Bulls view in as continuity. Like, is it just a one-season thing? Like, is continuity a thing or a theme that will continue over into the next season and the season beyond? So, like, there's so many questions that need to be asked around this aspect of continuity, but I don't necessarily think one that those questions have been asked, or if they have, we certainly haven't received a good answer around it. So to me, like, it's a nice buzzword, but that's all it really is at this point.
Yeah, buzzword is the perfect way to describe it for me. And so the first time we heard this was AK following the Bulls exit in the first round of the playoffs, in sort of the postseason exit interviews. He brought up the idea of continuity and bringing back, I think, a similar roster. We've heard guys like Zach Lowe, who recently talked about the Bulls on his podcast with Chris Herring, talk about, you know, maybe they owe it to themselves to run things back considering how good they were when they were healthy. To me, it almost feels like a bit of an excuse for not doing anything, because, and this is like quickly heading down a dark path, but like it only means something until, like, continuity only exists until they make a move, right? And so you can say continuity. If you then go out and trade Vooch, then it's not continuity anymore. And so for me, it's like, this is going to be our baseline. And of course, they're going to be talking about deals that they can make with other teams. Like, that's what you do. They're going to be taking calls. AK said that. They're going to be looking in the draft. They're going to be trying to make trades. They're going to be, like, going after free agents. All this stuff that he talked about in exit interviews. And so for me, continuity is like the baseline of, we're not going to make any changes unless we find a great change to make. And so I think for me, it's sort of just like this... excuses may be too strong, but it's just like this idea that we're not going to do anything drastic just for the sake of doing something drastic. And we're going to be okay with the roster that we have because of, you know, what we looked like when we were healthy. So let me ask you this. I mean, does this roster deserve continuity? Like, were they good enough to where you can say, yeah, well, they were healthy, they looked great. Is that like a good enough reason for keeping the roster the same?
I can understand why they would feel that way. And I think, to be fair, you know, halfway through the season, I felt very similarly. So it would kind of be hypocritical of me to say that there's no justification for it at all, where I think you could easily talk yourself into it. Now, it's maybe somewhat problematic that someone like Lonzo or Caruso are so valuable to your team, like two role guys are so valuable to your team, that the minute you remove them from the puzzle, all of a sudden everything else crumbles. Like, that shouldn't happen. And maybe because that did happen, maybe that sort of puts the whole continuity theme at peril. So I can see both sides, I guess, is my point. But look, for me, and maybe we're a little bit different in this, because I know you were keen on the Gobert trade, and like, if you pull a move for Gobert, you're at least sending out Vooch and Pat. That wouldn't really necessarily continue or bring you that continuity, let's say. Whereas me, I wasn't interested in a Gobert deal. I wasn't necessarily interested in something huge or sweeping in that nature. What I wanted was moves around the edges, around the end of the rotation. And like,
got him in the form of Goran Dragic and Andre Drummond.
I wasn't necessarily expecting that far down in the rotation, maybe a little bit further up. But like, let's replace Kobe White. Let's replace either Javonte or Derek Jones Jr. Obviously, you need to do something better at backup center than what the Bulls had. Tristan Thompson was an abomination, as was Tony Bradley. You can say that adding Andre Drummond is doing that, but it doesn't necessarily meet my demands. So what for me was, like, you could have continuity, but continuity doesn't necessarily stop you from doing or adding something really significant. And you guys the other day talked about the Celtics and their offseason, like adding Malcolm Brogdon to be your sixth man effectively. Like, you're keeping your core in place, you're keeping that continuity, but you're adding a legitimate piece that's going to potentially raise the level of your team. And like, that's what I was kind of expecting, something like that. It didn't necessarily have to be Malcolm Brogdon, but adding a legitimate bench piece, adding another Caruso level player to your bench, someone else that you could realistically depend on. Because if we go back to the playoffs, the Bulls basically had 3.5/4.5 guys that Billy could, you know, realistically depend on. So they needed to shore up their bench. That's what I was hoping for of the offseason. I thought you could do that whilst being, you know, continuing this continuity theme. So going back to your question, does this core deserve that? I think if I'm being positive, that they do. it would be a shame to see it be completely torn down just without getting a full season look at it. And maybe you won't even get that going into the season, depending on what happens with Lonzo. But at the same time, you know, the Bulls are at a bit of a crossroads here, and we'll talk about it a little bit later on. But that's why I'm interested and fascinated to see how long continuity lasts for, because they've got player decisions to make in season that are going to affect continuity, regardless of what they will or want to do, sort of thing, like with Vooch, with DeRozan, with other players. So it's going to be fascinating to see how keen or how willing they are to keep this whole thing going.
Yeah, I was totally on board with the Rudy Gobert trade, because I very much buy into this idea that, you know, unless you're drastically improving, you're falling behind, because you look at what the Celtics have done, you look at what the 76ers have done, what the Hawks have done, even like the Raptors to a certain extent. Like, I would have been thrilled with their offseason. To your point, like, they just added their like sixth and seventh guys. Like, the Bulls, this has been like something that Ricky and Jason talk about all the time, is, and Stefan, that like the Bulls top four, top five is great, but their six, seven, eight positions sort of like down their roster is really weak, and you don't really know what you're getting out of them. And so for me, if you're going to try to be a legitimate team, like, you need to have depth and you need to be able to withstand injuries. So continuity for the sake of like buying into this idea that Lonzo is going to be healthy for a full season, that, especially when you put that into perspective of what other teams have done, is where, you know, it like actually confuses me, as opposed to with Gobert, just like would have been sort of like a pipe dream scenario of adding a third true superstar, you know, caliber player to the mix. So I definitely, you know, and then you look at what the Jazz were able to get back from, the Bulls were never going to be in that mix. So definitely sort of continuity at the top, but then adding to sort of the middle and back end of the roster, of the playable roster, I think is like a really important thing. But then, you know, there are also ways to improve the team and the coaching staff without changing the roster. And I think that's another area where you just didn't see enough, in my opinion, in terms of this other thing that like all of Bulls Twitter is talking about all the time. There's no shooting coach. Like, they have Javonte Green, Ayodele, Derek Jones, like all these guys that are supposed to get minutes that are really inconsistent shooters. You draft Dalen Terry. Vooch goes from 38% to 31%. Like, you can't have this sort of variance, especially when you're shooting so few threes, and just continue to bring guys into the roster who aren't strong shooters and not help them improve. So the player development area, especially with regards to shooting, that was another area where I feel like you can have continuity while also finding ways to improve your team, whether it's on the floor or upstairs or in the coaching staff.
Yeah. And look, that may be the answer. And in 6 months' time, the whole theme of continuity may make complete sense, because Pat has taken a real leap. Like, Io has continued to improve. Maybe Kobe becomes a little bit more consistent. Perhaps the Bulls get something out of Dalen Terry in year one. Like, at present day, based on what we know now, like, we're questioning the validity of continuity, but maybe it will make complete sense in a number of months' time, when we actually get to see what some of these younger guys look like. Have they taken that step? And if they have, then maybe you didn't necessarily need to go out there in free agency and add, you know, a guy or two. I mean, you could still argue you could do this that whilst getting player development, and that is something I would definitely argue. But having said that, like, the way to overcome your inactivity in free agency is by these younger guys taking that step, like Pat, you know, obviously having him for hopefully a full season and him making a leap in year three. That would overcome so much of what we're talking about, because that's not a known quantity right now. That's why we obviously, I think in my opinion, fairly questioning this whole thing. So I think you're right in saying that the way you can justify continuity is if, you know, guys like Pat, if you, by keeping him around and not including him in a Rudy Gobert deal or whatever trade you want to throw out there, if he takes that next step, if he develops as a player and you get something more out of Io, who had a fantastic rookie season, then that's a way where all of a sudden, rather than having four or five guys that you could truly depend on, now you've got six or seven that you can really, you know, throw in a rotation and be comfortable with. So that is going to be key for the season. We kind of already knew that anyway, like that player development was going to be central to what the Bulls had to do this season, given that they made very few changes that are going to impact the rotation going forward. So that is the biggest aspect to me going forward in this season. Like, what is Pat look like? What does Io look like? What is Vooch going to look like? And it's kind of odd to think of player development for a 32-year-old guy, but he's still developing or finding himself. I hope that's why the downside was related to him sort of trying to figure out his role as a third option. Now he's, you know, got very comfortable being that lead option in Orlando, came to the Bulls and was a pseudo first option, and then all of a sudden was down to number three this season. So there's still some development to be had in his game in terms of accepting the new and different role and learning how to play with that. So I guess if you want to look at this from a rose-colored glasses perspective, if you want to put those lenses on, then it has to all come through player development. So that's what we're hoping on right now.
And especially with Pat, like you and Matt joke about this all the time in terms of like, well, he's not even 21 yet. And it's like, okay, fine. If the argument is he's not even 21 yet, so think about how good he can be. That's one thing. But then you also keep the roster the same and need from him a huge step forward. Yeah. How can you not invest in player development? Because now you're in no man's land where you're not developing him the way he needs to be developed. And granted, like, they drafted him before they got DeMar and Vooch. Like, they drafted him as a project, right? But now they need to accelerate that. He's in year three. This is a huge year for him. And you need to have player development so that he can basically, he's like the linchpin of the season, right? Like, they're going to be as good as, you know, hopefully they were when Lonzo was healthy, and then plus whatever Pat gives you. And so if that is the goal, for Pat to give you more, for Pat to take you to that next level, then you do need to rely on him. And in order to rely on him, you need to develop him. And so that's another area where I think they're just, and, you know, maybe he does just by virtue of the fact that he's going to be getting more consistent minutes and playing, you know, actual minutes and not having to sit out the entire season with an injury. But then it's like the chicken parm thing. Like, a year ago, we were talking, like 3 months ago, we were talking about how not ready Patrick was. So how can you then have these expectations and not, you know, do everything that you can from a front office perspective, coaching staff perspective, skills and development, all this stuff to try to get him as ready as you can? And maybe they are, but it just seems like there's been basically this whole idea of continuity for me is, how good can we be? Can we be as good as we were when we were healthy? And how much better does Patrick being a year older and a year more experienced, how much better does he make them? And so in order to accomplish those two things, you need to invest in health and you need to invest in player development. And even if you're not going to change the roster, I think that is an area where you can still make moves while having continuity.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I guess I come back to a point I made earlier, like, you could have both things at the same time. Like, at the moment, the way the Bulls are currently constructed, like, Pat is the main power forward, let's say. Like, I guess Derek Jones Jr. is going to get some backup minutes there. Javonte will get some backup minutes there. Billy will play 3-4 guard lineups. So there'll be other guys running through that four position. DeMar DeRozan even may do that too. So that's the way the Bulls will be addressing power forward. But I mean, I guess my argument would be, like, you could have continuity whilst also doing more. And for example, this is purely speculative, and I'm assuming if the money was the same, he would still have gone to the Sixers because of the, you know, past connections, his past connections to Morey, past connections to Harden, etc., wanting to play with Joel Embiid. But so I'm not suggesting that Bulls could have got PJ Tucker, but you could have gone out and got someone like PJ Tucker in theory, let's say, whilst keeping Pat. You keep that whole continuity thing together, you add another legitimate piece to your rotation, minimize the amount of pressure or significance that Pat needs to have on his shoulders in year three. And like, that would have been, to me, such a better offseason than what obviously they've put together. Now, like I said, maybe that's not possible. Maybe you can't get PJ Tucker for all the reasons why I mentioned before, but do something similar, I guess. If it's not PJ Tucker, I've banged on about Hartenstein before, so I won't go down that path. So I guess my point that,
but
I
even like Torrey Craig, who I think you and I talked about a lot at the trade deadline, or Nicholas Batum, like, obviously the Clippers are doing, they're spending whatever it takes to keep their whole team together. Mm-hmm. But like, again, you can find, like, they had a roster full of 6'4", 6'5" guys and 7 foot mm-hmm. guys. Mm-hmm. And they had an area of weakness. They needed shooting. They needed perimeter defense. And you can keep the core together while still adding somebody like a Torrey Craig. but they didn't.
Yeah, exactly. And then this is where, like, coming back to another point I made, like, this is when it's going to be interesting to see how long they keep this whole continuous theme going for. Like, is it for the first 20 games of the season, first 30 games of the season? Do we continue with how things are beyond the trade deadline? I mean, I touched on it before, but, like, Vooch is going to be an expiring deal. So if you want to continue continuity beyond this season, does that mean that Vooch is bound to get an extension from the Bulls? Like, again, because they haven't necessarily defined what continuity is or what it truly means, and they probably haven't for a number of reasons. So, like, you and I can't come back to them and use their words against them. But, you know, that needs to be defined for us to understand where this team is going. Because on one hand, you're arguing continuity, but, like, how long does that truly apply for? Like, if let's just, for example, say the first 40 games of the season, the Bulls are 15-25. Does that mean AK and Mark Eversley are just going to continue to sit on their hands and say, no, this team deserves more time? Or is 40 games enough time for them to realize that maybe continuity isn't the answer, that maybe things need to happen at the trade deadline? That's kind of the stuff I'm thinking about now. But because I haven't answered that, because I haven't defined that, like, it leads to questions like, what does it mean for Vooch? What does it mean for DeRozan? What does it mean for Pat? All these sorts of things need to be answered. And I guess we won't have that answer now. We'll have to wait and see how it plays out. And to be fair, the answers to those questions are very results-driven or variable in that nature. So it'll be interesting to see how the first 40 games of the season really play out. Like, well, that's when we'll get the answers to these questions.
Yeah, I mean, the Vooch thing is super interesting. Obviously, DeRozan will be around beyond this upcoming mm-hmm. season for one more yeah. year. What happens if Lonzo's not ready to go for the start of the season?
Exactly.
Can we talk yeah. about continuity at that point? Yeah. I don't think it will be full on disaster mode. Like, I think they'll be probably around or above 500 40 games into the season. And if that's the case, it's just going to be like treading water until hopefully everybody gets healthy. Right. So we'll see. I think the Vooch extension is super interesting. I'm not really sure what to make of that, but assuming they have to make a decision before they find out what the team looks like, because otherwise he's going to become unrestricted. Mm. He's extension eligible now. So they either like take that into next season. And then it's a similar situation to not trading Derek Jones Jr. at the trade deadline, where you basically just lose that asset. You play with the cap hold. Sure. But then you miss out on the opportunity to use him in a trade with that $12 million, $13 million salary that he had, and you bring him back for three. He's a fine player. I'm not like upset that he's on the roster by any means. And you and I had both been calling for him to play back up five. Mm-hmm. I think he is a really good guard defender. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on there, but he was a really good trade asset that they didn't use. And it takes you back to the idea of not keeping Larry Nance in that situation. So they got the draft pick from Portland and Derek Jones, but if they continue to not use those lower level assets that they have to add to this core, you know, it seems like to me, if the idea is continuity, that they're doing themselves a little bit of a disservice by not trying to add around the edges. And again, I've said this a million times before, this was a really light off season in terms of like players available that were going to be able to make an impact. And so I'm not like, there's not anyone that I'm super upset the Bulls didn't get. Obviously, Hartenstein would have been great, and I think he would have been, you know, the next era for the Bulls starting center at a really reasonable price. Mm-hmm. And so, again, now it just takes you back to this idea of the Vooch extension and when or if that happens. So that, I think, is going to be sort of one of the underrated storylines in the first for the rest of the summer and potentially the first half of the season, because to your point, you know, what happens if 30, 40 games in, they're 500 or worse, or Lonzo's not healthy, but they're around 500. Like, they're just going to continue to wait and see. And we've given Eversley and AK a ton of credit for being willing to be aggressive with trades and make moves. And now that the team is a roster built on guys that they've acquired, I'm interested to see what that next, like, it's much easier to trade away a bunch of Garpax era guys than it is to
yeah.
send out picks and players for guys that you want and then decide to trade them too. So super interesting to see what's going on with them. We'll continue to talk about that more in addition to sort of like, if they are going to bank on continuity, what do they need to change or adjust with their style of play? But first, You've heard it before. I'm going to do my best Big Dave impersonation here. It's not going to be as good, but bear with me. You know the answer to the best way to support CHGO is to download the PointsBet app and use promo code CHGO when you sign up. If you do that right now, you'll get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. But that's not all. If you make a $50 or more first-time deposit, you will receive a free CHGO membership, which unlocks all of our web content. That means all of my writing, all of Mark's writing, and you'll get a free t-shirt, and you will just get a free membership to all of our content. So that just like free money up and down. It's really a mistake to not do it. $2,000 in free bets, free CHGO membership, free shirt, all for $50 in a first-time deposit. So what are you waiting for? It's time to elevate your live betting game. Once the game starts, you don't just bet. Mark, you want to tell them what they need to do?
Well, I don't think the people will. They need to live their bet life.
That just was so smooth. I'm really glad we did that.
Do you reckon that's on Dave's level or Matt's level?
I think we got some work to do. Let's just say if Matt and Dave actually listen to this, I might hear about it. Let's talk about three-point attempt rate, because the Bulls did not shoot very many threes.
Mm-hmm.
And we know it's very difficult in today's NBA to sustain good offense without being a good or high volume three-point shooting team. They were super high in terms of three-point percentage for the first half of the season, when guys like Javonte and Derrick Jones and Ayo were all shooting 57% from deep. And we were all super excited about it, but obviously that was going to come crashing down. And unfortunately, they all just fell off a cliff at the same time. And I think that's a huge reason why the Bulls really suffered offensively down the stretch and in the playoffs, especially obviously, you know, the Bucks were basically just leaving them wide open. So Mark put together this graphic, Joe, you can throw it back up there, of just like the last couple seasons of three-point attempt rate and win-loss record. And just this idea of, can you even be a good team if you shoot few threes? So Mark, what stands out to you here?
Yeah, well, look, just coming back one step, like the reason why we're talking about this is an extension to continuity. Like we talked about that in the previous 20 odd minutes of the show, but because the Bulls roster is unchanged or largely unchanged, because we know that the Bulls were last in the NBA in three-point attempt rate last season, it's fair to assume that they're going to be, if not last, then maybe bottom five. So I took a look at like just over the last three seasons, just who was bottom five in three-point attempt rate in the NBA. What was their win-loss record? How did that sort of stack up to sort of help answer the question, can you win at a high level whilst shooting threes? And I guess the takeaway for me is that I think you can, because the Bulls, as we know, they were 30th in three-point attempt rate last season. They won 46 games. At one point, they were on track to win 55 games. So we know obviously what happened as to why they didn't necessarily win that amount of games, but even you know, ignoring the Bulls for a second, the Phoenix Suns were 27th in three-point attempt rate. They won 64 games last season. The Sixers in the 2020-21 season, they were one of the better teams in the East. They won 49 games in a 72-game season. The Memphis Grizzlies this season had 56 wins and were the second best team in the Western Conference, maybe even the second best team in the NBA. Even going back to 2019-20, teams like Denver and Indiana won a lot of basketball games by being a low volume 3-point shooting team. So I think, you know, if someone like me who's made a lot about, or who's banged on a lot about 3-point attempt rate, like it's very important to me that the Bulls are, at least better than 30th in terms of 3-point attempt rate for a lot of different reasons, but it doesn't preclude you from winning games. So that is very clear to me, and that is the expectation, or that should be the baseline of our thinking here, that just because you don't shoot a lot of threes doesn't mean you can't be a good team. What it does mean, though, is you need to excel in other areas. I mentioned the Suns before. They were the best mid-range shooting team in the NBA. So they were able to overcome their lack of three-point shooting by finding other avenues to score, by exploiting that and being better at other teams than that and making up that delta between the three-point line. Similarly with the Memphis Grizzlies this season, who won 56 games, like they were not a high-volume three-point shooting team, but what they did extremely well was get in transition. They overcome the deficit in that facet, but they were also one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the NBA as well. So they were able to find extra points or make up that deficit in 3-point shooting by getting on the glass and you know, scoring or creating second chances via offensive rebounding. So I guess it's somewhat elementary to say that if you're bottom five in 3-point shooting or the attempt rate, let's say, that you're going to be a bad team, because that isn't necessarily true. But what it does mean, or what it emphasizes, is that you have to find other avenues on offense to really make up for that gap in 3-point shooting. So the Bulls had that in the first half of the season, where they were one of the best transition teams in the NBA. With Lonzo and Caruso and the defense that were playing, they were able to overcome that gap in 3-point shooting by getting stops, getting in transition, and getting all those fast break points. We saw that completely disappear once Lonzo and Caruso went out, which meant, obviously, when their transition game went away, it sort of emphasized their lack of 3-point shooting, as we saw in the playoffs. So I guess, to answer the question, Will, like, yes, you can be a high-level basketball team without shooting so many threes, but I guess the question now becomes, how are you going to make up that deficit? So that is now the question for the Bulls. Do they revert back to what they were doing in the first half of last season, or is what we saw of that second half of the season more telling or more representative of who they will be, particularly if Lonzo isn't ready to go?
Yeah, I mean, Lonzo, this was a discussion I think that was thrown around a ton in terms of Lonzo losing you 8 three-pointers attempted per game. Yeah. Like, obviously, I think the number goes up a little bit with him back, sure. I think the efficiency leveled out the way that it probably would have. I don't think Lonzo has ever been, I mean, Lonzo's previous career high from three, I believe, was 37%. He shot 42 this year. So I think it's fair to say, you know, he's probably going to come down a little bit as well in terms of 3-point percentage. Yeah. Last 2 years prior to his season with the Bulls, in which he shot 42.3% on 7.4 threes per game, was 37.8 on 8.3 and 37.5 on 6.3. So super high volume and obviously high efficiency. But if you drop from 42.5 to 40, or 42.5 to 38, where he was the last season, I mean, that's a huge drop off. So yeah. They not only need him to be shooting a lot, but they need him to continue to make threes at a super high level. And, you know, my takeaway from this thing that you put together, which I think is super interesting, is that, you know, you need to have a true identity offensively in order mm-hmm. to make up for that thing. And that's something that, you know, I asked Billy about it a few times over the course of the season, where it was just like, well, you're not shooting any threes anymore. Like, how do you fix it? How do you fix the delta? Mm-hmm. And the answer was like, well, basically, like, you either, it's like the four factors. You got to get to the line a lot. You got to get out in transition. And mm-hmm. so when you lose Lonzo and you lose Caruso and you lose mm-hmm. Zach, and basically the offense turns into the DeMar DeRozan show, which, to be fair, he was awesome. But like that, you remove an entire part of the team's identity. I think that's one, an aspect of continuity that they're trying to get back to. But two, I think it makes the fans and the media and all these people just kind of forget how good they were. Now, the Grizzlies, who had a super high or super low 3-point attempt rate, were insane in transition. They had Ja, they had Bane, they had all these guys that run the floor. Yeah. They were amazing. And so, you know, I don't know if the Bulls are at that level, but what they had was really special in transition. Well, you know, it remains to be seen whether that kind of style of play, you know, it was a great balance. Like, they were able to play fast, but then also could get into this secondary transition with Vooch trailing, and then, you know, flow into a third tertiary offense where it was like Zach or DeMar just like getting you a last 7 seconds of the shot clock look. And so that's like a really solid offensive possession, those three options. So we'll see if they can do that at a super high level. But again, it all comes back to this idea of continuity, where can you even rely on them? Because if Lonzo's gone, not only does it remove the 3-point attempt rate, it removes the transition game. And so now you've lost two aspects of your identity, both of which basically just kill you analytically, because you can't shoot threes and you can't get out in transition. So you're relying on free throws and offensive rebounds, and you're the worst offensive rebounding team in the league. So you're just relying on DeMar. And I think that just became overwhelming for him and for the rest of the team when shots just didn't fall for everybody else.
Yeah. Well, look, even with Lonzo, and I have the numbers, but when the Bulls were at their height, let's cap the date until the end of December 31, 2021. So it's not exactly halfway, but it's like 35 games into the season. The Bulls were 29th in three-point attempt rate, and that was with Lonzo playing most of those games. So even with Lonzo, the Bulls are a very low volume three-point shooting team. So to me, there's no getting around that. Like, but particularly because the roster has remained unchanged, I would expect going forward into next season, the Bulls are going to be a very low three-point attempt rate team, which is concerning, but there's ways around that, as I sort of alluded to. And as we've cited, like the Phoenix Suns got around that by having Devin Booker and Chris Paul and maybe potentially Kevin Durant, by mid-ranging the hell out of teams and just being so efficient from there that it overcame.
And Ayton shoots like 60% from the field, and Mikal Bridges is really good at it. Like, yeah, they had so many mid-range weapons. And I think I do worry that these are the exceptions that make the rule, as opposed 100%. To this is the avenue to do it.
Completely agree. They are the exceptions. They're potentially outliers. And whilst maybe the Suns aren't a great example right now, given how they exited the playoffs, like relying on the mid-range jumper maybe is something that's maybe more reliable than being a high transition team or a team that forces turnovers, gets in the passing lane, and then starts that fast break. Like in the playoffs, like that may work in the regular season, but I do question the validity of that approach come playoff time when things start to slow down. It becomes more of a naturalized half-court basketball game. Like if that avenue of scoring goes down because that's just, you know, playoff basketball, there's less possessions and those sorts of things, then does the three-point variance come to play at that point? And the reason why, like, three-point attempt rate, it concerns me is like the Bulls just don't have a top five or a top 10 player. And I know that's very rudimentary analysis, but in some ways that matters. You know, it matters so much in basketball, and you can get around some of these deficiencies if you can kick the ball to a Giannis or a Kawhi, or, you know, insert whoever, Kevin Durant, whatever the player may be, a Luka, for example. You can get past some of these deficiencies. And I mentioned the Nuggets before, that they were one of the worst three-point shooting teams or in terms of volume a couple of years back. Like, they had Jokic. So they have other answers to get around this that are maybe more reliable than what the Bulls have. So why three-point attempt rate matters to me is, from a variance perspective, because you don't have that high-level absolute gun of a player, you need something else to sort of overcome the talent mismatch that you may sort of come up against. So that's why I've been banging on about three-point attempt rate. I still think the Bulls can be a good team without being a high-volume three-point shooting team. But another thing that I looked at, like, ultimately we're all here to see the Bulls win a title. I don't think this group is necessarily going to do it. But I went back and looked at the last 10 NBA champions and sort of compared their three-point attempt rate versus, you know, where that's typically sits. But more importantly, what I started to think about, like, it's less about your three-point attempt rate and your efficiency from three-point line, but more so you just your general offensive output. So I started looking at true shooting percentages amongst the top 10, not the top 10, the last 10 NBA champions. And the majority of NBA champions over the last 10 years have been, top five in offensive rating, top five in true shooting percentage. So why that matters is, three-point shooting obviously goes a long way in helping you boost your true shooting percentage. There's obviously other ways around it. Like I said, like the Bulls were a very good true shooting percentage team in the first half of the season, as were the Phoenix Suns, because they were so good from the mid-range. But the Bulls, if we're removing the three-point line because they're not necessarily going to take up a lot of threes, if we're potentially removing the transition aspect of their offense because Lonzo may be out, or maybe he's playing but he's not at the same level, and they don't necessarily have a facsimile to play that same way. If you start removing these sorts of avenues from the offense, it becomes very narrow, it becomes very ISO-driven, and your realistic ability to be an efficient offense starts to dwindle. So again, I'm not expecting the Bulls to be, you know, NBA champions anytime soon, but I guess the consistent theme here is, to be an NBA champion, you need to have a top five offense, or you need to be top five in true shooting percentage. And if you don't have a huge three-point attempt rate, and you don't have, you know, a guy that's an offense unto himself, like a Kevin Durant or, you know, whoever it may be, a Luka, then you're going to struggle to be an efficient offensive team. So that's why it all comes back to this whole three-point attempt rate conversation, and even loops back into the continuity theme. And it's all connected, I guess, is my point.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the last 10 or however many it is champions that you put up here with their three-point attempt rate and true shooting percentage, And I mean, there's a couple of things that stand out. One is that most of them are, you know, not necessarily super high 3-point attempt teams, but they're super high efficiency teams.
Yeah.
And what that tells me is that they've got a style of play that they are good at. And then you look at the teams and it's the Warriors. They have the unsolvable like problem that is the Steph Curry, Draymond Green pick and roll. 7 years later, you still can't figure out how to defend that. You have the Milwaukee Bucks. They have a Giannis. You have the Lakers. They had LeBron. The Raptors had a great style of play, but at the end of the game, you had Kawhi Leonard to go to. The Warriors, the Cavs. Like, you have something that you can always fall back on. And so, again, it comes back to Lonzo. And this is something that Zach Lowe said in that podcast I referenced earlier, which was like, how many All-Star games has Lonzo been to? Zero. Like, do we really think Lonzo Ball is like worth 15 or 10 wins for the Bulls? And like, I kind of do. It's crazy. But like, he, as I said before, he is like the function of two major aspects of not only the Bulls' efficiency, but their identity. Three, even if you include defense. Like, he is the best at getting out in transition. He's the best go-ahead passer on the team. He is the highest volume, highest efficiency three-point shooter on the team. And to your point, like, you can't lose out on both of those things and still have that same identity. And all of this is not to mention like just this very basic aspect of it, which is spacing. Like, if you've got Ayo and Javante out here bombing 52 threes a game against the Bucks in the playoffs, and they're giving them wide open threes so that they can triple team DeMar at the elbow. Yeah, of course the Bulls offense is going to suffer because DeMar's got Wesley Matthews, Drew Holiday, and Giannis draped all over him, and nobody can hit a shot. So it's not even just about shooting a lot of threes. Like, I think that's an area where people will get annoyed if you just say, well, shoot more threes. I think there's more to it than that. But I do think at the end of the day, the Bulls can't be last. Like, you can be in the bottom 10 and get over it if everybody is healthy and DeMar is playing well and Lonzo has the team moving in transition and they're getting stops on defense, getting steals, live ball turnovers, getting out in transition and moving the ball, and he's shooting a ton of threes. Like, they can be okay if they're a bottom 10 team, but to be last by like a significant margin, I think that's not enough. And then you also look at it in terms of going into the playoffs as a super low volume 3-point shooting team, not having worked on that or practiced that at all, and now having Vooch jack up 11, 12, 13 threes in a game because that's what the Bucks are just affording him. So I think they need to have a default offense that they can really make their identity. And maybe Lonzo is the key to that, and why he is so important and valuable to just like the general outcome of this team. And then DeMar is that guy that you go to in the late clock situations, who was obviously way better than anybody suspected he would be, but like, he was legitimately good enough and shot a high enough percentage and won games on his own in clutch situations where he could be that guy that is just a go-to bucket in late game scenarios where you need something because the transition game or three-point game isn't working.
Yeah, but like, I said this before, that you need like maybe a top five, 10 or top five or top 10 guy. And maybe that's not necessarily completely true. Like, it is to a large extent. And generally it's true. Like, the Lakers were 23rd in 2020 in 3-point attempt rate, but they were ninth in true shooting percentage just because they could rely heavily on a LeBron AD pick and roll. And obviously there's no stopping that. And in some ways, you know, if we think about the playoffs, DeMar was obviously very limited based on what the Bucks were doing from an offense, a defensive standpoint, but he was very limited because they just completely ignored the Bulls shooters. So if we think about what we talked about before and the fact that the roster has remained unchanged, like, even if you are a low 3-point attempt rate, if you had someone else in the corner beyond Derek Jones Jr. or Javonte Green or whoever that may be, actually being there to finish these possessions, then it changes the way teams defend DeRozan. It changes the way the teams defend the Bulls more generally. And, you know, you can still be a low 3-point attempt team, but if you're at a high efficiency 3-point attempt team, then you can overcome that. And like, even the Spurs in years past, they haven't been a high 3-point attempt rate team, but they've found other avenues to score, or when they have shot their threes, they've had legitimate, you know, 40% shooters across the court that can make those jumpers. The Bulls don't have that in that sense. So, yeah, they need to find other ways to score. We saw them do that last season. They need to return back to that coming forward. But obviously the question is, will they be able to? And you mentioned Lonzo, and we can talk about this a little bit more in the next segment. But this idea that a role guy is so fundamental to how you approach the game on both sides of the court, like that's something that needs to change. And we need to expand on that a little bit more, and maybe we can, Will. But Lonzo just can't be this important to a basketball team. Like, Lonzo's obviously a very good player, someone that I love watching, but for your fourth best player to be this important to your function and your success as a team, like, that's ultimately very concerning.
Is he the fourth best player? I'm not so
well,
sure.
Well, I'm still pegging in Vooch. The Vooch apologist is still standing Vooch here, so I'll put him at fourth. Not Vooch, I'll put Lonzo at fourth.
I've waffled a little bit on Vooch. I still am probably higher on him than most, for sure. But I am also the world's leading Lonzo appreciator fan club. So I don't know, man. I mean, the Bulls were built in such a funky way where this hypothetical doesn't really work. But like, if you replaced Vooch with like a replacement caliber center for the entire season versus Lonzo with a replacement caliber guard, I feel like the team suffers more without Lonzo. And again, that just all comes back to identity and continuity and what you need to be in order to win at a high level. And we'll talk about that more. But first, I want to tell you about FOCO. FOCO is the home for the best Chicago sports coverage and all of its merchandise and collectibles. So we partnered up with FOCO, and you can secure your access to the best collectibles and gear around Bears, Cubs, White Sox, Blackhawks, Bulls. FOCO has something for you, for a friend, for your kid, a parent, anybody you know wants some Chicago sports gear. Obviously, you want to get in the CHGO locker and get them a t-shirt there. But once you're done with that, you can get them some gear from FOCO. They've got collectibles. They've got swimsuits, bobbleheads, t-shirts, Crocs even. Might have to get myself a pair of Crocs. I've been thinking about it for a while. But whatever you need, FOCO has got you covered. Head on over to FOCO.com or click the link below in the YouTube description, and you will get 10% off all non-presale items by using code, you guessed it, CHGO. So check that out. FOCO's got some great stuff, and we'll hook you up with 10% off. Mark, let's talk about just this idea of what they need to do to improve, because obviously the identity was kind of wonky towards the end of the season. And as we talked about, the three-point attempt rate didn't help things out. The defensive scheme that they built on two guards, which I think is super rare in the NBA, was completely derailed when those guys went down. So what do they do? What do they do? I'll leave it vague.
Well, this is the question now. Like, I was going to say we know what they are, but I guess you can maybe say we don't necessarily, because we only saw what they were fully healthy for, you know, half of the season. But I don't think we can just automatically, you know, throw away the last 40 odd games and say that that's not relevant, because it is. Like, how the team responded once they lost Caruso and Lonzo and even Zach, like that's still telling in some nature. Now, obviously we hope that they don't go through that again, and maybe that in itself will help correct things. But given so much of this team from a roster perspective is unchanged, and what we just discussed, you know, just before that, we expect their three-point volume to remain quite low, we have to start asking the question, like, what can the Bulls do to make themselves different? What can they do internally to boost them up from, you know, their sixth place finish in terms of the standings last season to something more? To, you know, can they get up to the third seed as an example? Can they be a team that, in the event something doesn't necessarily click with the Sixers or whoever it may be, maybe the Bucks takes a step back, maybe the Celtics from last season aren't able to replicate what they did last season into next season. Like, in the event something like that happens, can the Bulls be that team that is, you know, well-placed to take a step in that sense? And for that to happen, something needs to internally change. So I guess, how does that happen? Like, in some ways, well, I think they need to almost foolproof themselves from any, in terms of their style of play, from the event of Lonzo or Caruso missing basketball games. So like, I don't think there's ability for the team to increase their 3-point attempt rate. I think that would be nice, but based on the roster itself, I don't think that's going to happen. So I started to think about the defense. Like, can the Bulls or should the Bulls return back to their style of defense that they were playing in the first half of the season, where they were just so manic in getting into the passing lanes, being so aggressive on screens and really being, at the point of attack, they were so damn good that defense was sort of fun or fueling their offense. Like, is that something that should continue to happen, knowing that someone like Lonzo or someone like Caruso is so susceptible to injury if you remove those pieces and all of a sudden your defense is gone? So I'm starting to think about, like, does it make more sense for the Bulls to injury-proof their defensive scheme some by maybe dialing back the way they play their defense, maybe not being as aggressive, maybe not being so Lonzo or Caruso dependent, not forging your defensive identity around these guys, which maybe is not the right thing to do, given that's what you sort of brought them in to do. But at the same time, if we saw what the Bulls look like without those guys, so can you build a defensive scheme that is less dependent on Lonzo and Caruso? I think that's something that Billy and the coaching staff need to look at. And you need to also almost plan at this point for those guys to be missing games. So that's something that I think they need to do is maybe change their defensive scheme a little bit, maybe be a little bit more conservative in nature, just for it to be a baseline of what you can fall back to in the event that Lonzo or Caruso isn't there. And I think Bulls fans should be still banking on that not happening, I guess, or happening rather, that one of Lonzo or Caruso is going to be missing games at some point. So what do you fall back to? So if you're going from one drastic style to another because those guys are removed, like, that's when you get into problems. But if it can be a little bit more, malleable in that sense, or not extreme when you remove one of those guys, then I think that's something that they need to do.
Yeah. So do you mean like Lonzo proofing it while Lonzo is healthy, or
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's some validity to that, but I also think that's kind of what happened, is that they just got really conservative, and that made Vooch look really bad because now he's supposed to be at the level of the screen and wasn't up there. And, you know, the help defense that Lonzo provides was now DeMar, and that is not good. So I think it's just a product of the roster being super top heavy in terms of, you know, offensive talent and defensive talent. There's like two good defenders on this team. Obviously, you want to see some internal development from guys like Io. Dalen Terry could be another guy that is really successful at the point of attack. I honestly think like Derek Jones Jr. is a much better defender of guards than he is of bigs, just because of how like slender he is. He's super long. I think if you just put him on the ball and he defends at the point of attack, he'd be a lot better. So I do think they're kind of built to withstand that, but obviously they're not good enough without those guys, just because nobody is. But I think when they got a little bit more conservative, that's when they kind of lost their identity.
But I guess what I'm saying is this, like, the Bulls were so aggressive at the point of attack because, one, they had Lonzo playing at the point of attack, for example, or they had Caruso at the point of attack defending the initial pick and roll. But then behind him, they had someone like Lonzo who could be that weak side help guy that could, you know, rotate all over the court and could make up for some missed rotations. But if you dial back Caruso and his aggressiveness at the top of the pick and roll, and, you know, maybe you don't play as heavy in the passing lanes as Lonzo has, or you don't necessarily rotate as heavy as you have in the past, then when you remove one of these guys from injuries, all of a sudden the rest of the team isn't, you know, reliant on Lonzo coming in and helping in the way he was before. If you're sort of already pegging it back, I'm not necessarily suggesting that they need to go completely away from their identity, but if you just peg it back 5 or 10%, then your defense isn't as aggressive. You may be not in rotation as much. You're maybe not reliant on help defense as much. That way, you know, guys like DeMar and LaVine, they don't have to be that split second there. They don't have to be that split second ahead of the play like they would in an event where Lonzo isn't there. Because, you know, if he's not there, then you don't have that play to make it up, I guess. So if you can just dial it back a degree or two, then I just wonder if there's something to be had there whereby if there's just more familiarity with Lonzo maybe not being that same attacking type of defender that he was in the past. And maybe they need to do that regardless if Lonzo's there. Like, if he's still nursing a knee injury, if he's only playing in back-to-backs or he's only playing for 25 minutes a game, like, maybe that's something you have to do regardless of if he's playing or not. So I just wonder if they could maybe cool it a bit on the previous defensive scheme, maybe make it a little bit more conservative of nature, and it just becomes more of a flat baseline and the team expects to not have necessarily that same level of help and rotational defense that they had in the past, that they're not necessarily getting into the passing lanes at the same volume, that it just becomes almost second nature, irrespective of whether Lonzo is there or not. But when you're going so balls to the wall in one scheme and then all of a sudden you remove that and you have to figure out a completely different defensive scheme all of a sudden, I think just that sudden shock of changing styles is more, it's more problematic, I guess. So I'm just trying to find a more blended approach.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. If they were a team that you could clearly peg into the top six and say they're going to make the playoffs, let's take that regular season a little bit easier and not go so aggressive, I would definitely be more on board with that. And I think they probably should dial it back a little bit. But part of me is also like, this team needs to be able to play to their identity, whether or not Lonzo's on the floor. So what does that mean? It means Dalen Terry gets really good at reading from the weak side and making those similar kinds of plays. Obviously, he's not going to be as good as Lonzo because I just don't think there are very many players who are. But I think they can't go to this conservative approach because I just don't think they're good enough. Like, they were like 23rd defense if you remove the first half, when they were actually, you know, top 10. I'm sure that number is way lower. I don't know it off the top of my head here, but and then you also sort of like factor in the lack of 3-point shooting and the ability for the offense to sort of fall off a cliff at any point given the shooters around. Like, I just think they need to be better at the things they need to be good at. So for me, it's more about like improving and playing to an identity. And I think that's even more true on offense. Like, without Lonzo, they just devolved. And again, super weird that like a non all-star player would derail the season. It was true on both ends. So I definitely, you know, see what you're trying to say. And I think realistically they should do that. But part of me is also just always feeling hyper aggressive when it comes to, you know, making trades or trying to improve the roster or, you know, trying to play to a certain style. Like, I think the most disappointing thing for me about the way that the last season ended was that they just completely lost sight of who they were and they could not figure out why or how. And I think playing to a certain style will always be an anchor for you, that if you say, well, we're just going to be, you know, not the same defense anymore, I just think you're going to lose sight of who you are, and that will really make you suffer.
Yeah, I certainly get that point. But at the same time, I thought the Bulls defense in the playoffs was actually quite good. And that was obviously without Lonzo. And you know, obviously they had Caruso, but maybe not 100% of his value because he was still, I think, lingering in terms of injuries, or injuries were still lingering. So I think they still have the ability to be a good half-court defense. Maybe not top 10, but if they could be, you know, 13th, 14th, 15th with a more conservative scheme, one that is less Lonzo dependent or less Caruso dependent, let's say, and they're playing maybe a little bit more reserved in nature, which then, like I said, puts the defense less in rotation, which means you've got less of a chance that DeRozan or Levine or even Vooch are going to miss a rotation, then I'm more about that, to be honest with you. And even like we can move towards the offensive end, but this idea of Lonzo proofing the entire team, I think, is very important to me because I'm not convinced that he's someone that's going to be around for the majority of the season. So if we start building this team's identity and its traits around someone like Lonzo, which ideally you would, and ideally you would really, as you sort of said, like, be super aggressive about it, I just can't do that because I just don't trust Lonzo's knee. I don't trust his health more generally. He's missed a chunk of games in four of his five, or first five seasons. So I can't be building my team's identity around Lonzo. It was fun while it lasted, but I just don't think that's...
It was fun while it lasted.
It was amazing. I loved it. I thought this team, you know, could have been the first team, the first seed in the East with it. But I don't think it's something you can bank on. So I guess that's where I'm coming from. And I'm unlike you, maybe, where you're hyper aggressive and wanting to pull trades and wanting to make these drastic changes, I'm the complete opposite. I'm very conservative in that sense. I'm all right. Let's take stock. Let's see how we can foolproof this to a degree where we don't go back to that situation where we're, you know, you're losing more games and you're winning. And maybe I won't experience the highs that, that you do will in that sense. But yeah, I guess that,
but,
that's
I mean,
how
there's certainly pros and cons for each approach, right?
Yeah,
if you're taking huge swings, you're striking out a lot and you're hitting a lot of pop flies, but you're also hitting some home runs. If you're hitting for average, you're getting on base, but you may. I keep on throwing out baseball references. Like, I don't know what's going on with me. I'm just like, I'm preparing for the Cubs to trade Wilson Contreras and it's making me sad. But anyway, you should probably not watch any Cubs baseball right now. You should watch CHGO Cubs, but not the Cubs because they're really a sorry team. I think this is a good place to stop. I think this has been a really awesome conversation, and I'm curious for all of those who listen, if you want to keep hearing Mark and I ramble on for an hour, if you have any topics or areas for us to discuss, we're trying to get like theoretical and philosophical here in the off season, cause there's not anything to react to. So shoot us some ideas and we'll try to start doing these with some regularity. But Mark, it's been a lot of fun. I am glad to be doing this, CHGO HQ thing that we're doing. So that's been fun. But yeah, we'll tune back in for this at some point soon. Mark, for you at MK Hoops on Twitter, Joey behind the sticks, always appreciate the work that you're doing. Hey. I am Will. Hey, Joey. I'm Will at Wilm Gottlieb on Twitter. Follow us, follow CHGO Bulls, like, subscribe, all that fun stuff. It helps us out a lot. We'll talk to you next time. See Red, be good.